everybody. It's the Great Debates Podcast. Here we are in the Great Debates Studios. I'm your moderator, Dan Medina, and I'm here with Steve Healy and Dave King.
Okay.
Before we get started, I want to thank our generous sponsor, Homestate, for providing the victuals for this. Is that how you say that word?
Yeah, I think so.
Victuals.
A lot of different pronunciations.
Just to be clear, they don't know they're our sponsor.
That's correct, and they don't. They're not very generous. We give them cash in exchange for their goods.
But nonetheless, they're our sponsor. They sponsor
us in a way that they don't quite yet know about.
Someday they'll find out, and I'd like to think they'll be proud.
Yeah, they did good.
Should we dive right into a micro?
Yeah, speaking of old-timey things, vigils and whatnot, I've got a micro debate topic if you guys are ready.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. The topic, Abraham Lincoln's beard smelled bad.
Okay, I guess I'll be taking the con, right? Because that's more life-affirming. It's more life-affirming to imagine that it smelled good.
Fair enough.
I guess. Okay. All right. So
the con.
Does that mean I start?
Yeah.
Well, Abraham Lincoln was president in the 1860s. Yes. How am I doing so far? Obviously, the standards of bathing were very different at this time. In addition to that, Abraham Lincoln's beard was not like a close beard. It was quite a long beard. I think Abraham Lincoln was known for suffering from depression. He was not a man who... I don't picture Abraham Lincoln being the guy who, like... pride himself on cleaning himself every day and wanting to look proper. Also, this was a time when the president was not necessarily someone of such high status that they needed to be in perfect, in perfect outfits and in perfect decorum at every time. The president regularly walked the streets of Washington without any security. Didn't work out so well for him. The president was not someone who needed to be picture perfect at all times as they are in today's society. For those reasons and others, which we'll get to, Abraham Lincoln's beard smelled bad.
I don't think so. I think his beard, every once in a while, yeah, he probably had a long, exhausting day. He didn't get a chance to wash. But I bet Abraham Lincoln's beard day-to-day smelled terrific. Look, this is a guy who was elected president of the United States twice. Elected in the middle of the Civil War, he had something special and charismatic about him. He no doubt had some kind of spray or cinnamon mister he put on his beard. Perhaps he smelled a bit of tobacco. There may have been a scent, but I bet it was a very pleasing one. I don't think that Abraham Lincoln, who was conducting himself in a very busy schedule, he had a lot of people to help him. He definitely kept his beard clean, and he did not smell bad.
Well, it's interesting that you say things. What did you say, tobacco and that kind of thing? Because
yeah.
I think it would definitely smell bad to us because the food and scents and even the cologne and fragrances of the time, I don't think would hold the test of time. Us, I think our standards of smell are simply different than they used to be. And so I'm guessing that he, first of all, ate a very different diet than we're used to. Just the amount of alcohol that dripped down in here.
I don't think he was known to be throwing back that much alcohol.
It wasn't getting thrown back. It was dripping down.
The little bit of alcohol that he had probably just served to decontaminate his beard. Look, this is a man, people were drawn to him, right? They were almost worshipful of him. The legacy that he left behind was...
Oh, he was worshipped not because of his physical appearance, though. If anything, he was ridiculed for his voice. People thought he was a funny-looking guy. He was worshipped because he did the best he could. He was a great orator.
A man on that level of both in the individual encounter and in the broad encounter, he was drawn
to people. Do you have any evidence that he ever took a bath or washed himself?
I haven't looked into his bathing habits, but I am sure that he washed his face. I believe it's more likely that he probably sprayed on some kind of perfume or
scent, which smelled bad.
The French ambassador was coming by the White House. He probably brought gifts. If he smelled Lincoln's beard smelling bad, he would have brought him some kind of perfume or something.
You think that Lincoln was worried about smelling good in front of the French ambassador? I don't think so. I'm pretty sure he was like, well, here's the one guy I don't need to smell good for.
Wait, do you think French people smell bad or good?
What was it? Bad.
Yeah, I think they smell bad.
You think the ambassador of France to the United States didn't smell pretty good?
In the 19th century,
in
for sure.
1862, leaked to high heaven.
No, he smelled great of some weird... It probably would have smelled like an old lady perfume to us, but he definitely had some
which smells bad. That was my earlier point.
He was rolling on.
And also, I don't think so. I don't think... I mean, French people are known for not using deodorant and antiperspirant.
I don't know. I think French people smell pretty good.
I'm going to go with Steve on this one.
It what
only,
the fuck?
Only because he used the phrase cinnamon mister.
which that's just bullshit. I mean, there were no cinnamon misters.
Cinnamon
sure,
mister.
There was some
that's
kind
a ballsy
of,
move.
You'd buy some kind of misting spray.
Cinnamon mister. I'm going to start my cover band of the Gin Blossoms and call it Cinnamon Mister.
Oh, great.
Good luck.
You know, there's all this news recently that having a beard in itself is a very dirty thing. It has as much germs in it as maybe a toilet seat does.
That's not really anything I want out there.
That's fine.
I don't want people thinking toilet as they lean in for a kiss.
You guys both have nice beards.
And nice toilets.
Actually, face, kind of interesting. Do you think, like, if we can put aside our debating hats for a minute and talk about, like, charismatic people, galvanizing people, do they sometimes smell a little bit bad? Is that part of it? Like, don't rock stars and stuff famously smell their BO is kind of like part of their mystique?
Pheromones.
Well, general attraction is correlated to good smell. I know that. I know that there was a... I remember learning this in evolutionary biology that there's a semi-famous experiment where women were asked to rank men... pictures of men based on their attractiveness, and then the men were given like basic, just like simple white t-shirts to wear for a week without showering,
okay,
or something like this. I'm sort of paraphrasing the study,
okay.
And then they were asked to rank how good the shirts smell, a blind smell test, if you will. Okay. And there was a statistically significant correlation between how good the women thought the men smelled and how attractive they thought they were.
Oh, wait. The women are blindly smelling these shirts.
Yes. And they would rank. They would say, like, I give this shirt an 8 out of 10. Or they say, or it would be like, this is the 10th best smelling out of 30 shirts.
And they've also ranked pictures of the men.
Yes, and they don't know which corresponds to which.
But it turns out good-looking people smell better than ugly.
Exactly.
Got it. That's interesting. Well, maybe that's just a thing of, like...
Also, wasn't necessarily that good-looking people smell better than others, but that women were...
I said uggos.
Oh, uggos. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The men... who the women were attracted to smelled better than the men who they were not attracted to.
But they
so even within personal preference, there was a correlation. Am I making sense here?
A physically attractive person, you're likely to also find their smell appealing.
If you find them physically attractive, it's not if society finds them attractive. It's if you find them attractive, you're more likely to find their smell good, even if you don't know that it's the person that do you know, even blindly.
Hmm. Yeah, I buy that.
What is going on in the colleges and universities of America where they're rounding up people like, you're going to smell a bunch of shirts today?
Also, before the ethics police took over psychology, it was the studies that you could do were fucking awesome.
Oh, really?
What's you like could the get kids one? Drunk and tell you could get them not drunk, but tell them that they were drunk and they'd be like, no, we're still drunk. And it was all kinds of crazy stuff.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you can't really do that anymore.
Do you have an all-time favorite psychology study?
No.
You were a psychology student.
I was
a
psychology student. No, I mean, the most interesting stuff was more, I don't know, I don't think we have time to get into it.
What?
I'll tell you this. I liked cognitive psychology was the stuff that interested me more. I was into base rates and the natural biases of the human mind. I found those really interesting.
Okay.
And we talked about randomness a little bit this week. I guess we'll talk about it again. I had a psychology professor who said, if I'll take three people from the crowd and you can generate a random sequence of ones and zeros, and what you think is a random sequence of ones and zeros, and then the fourth student is going to write a 20-digit sequence from this actual random sequence of ones and zeros, and I'll be able to tell you which one is the true random sequence and which ones are the human-generated random sequence.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. And the basic idea is that humans, like, there's certain tricks that
you can't generate random.
We're
numbers.
Not good at generating random flips of the coin, so to speak. We have a bias against streaks. We think that there's no way there'd ever be three in a row. And so the simplest shortcut is the professor would look for the longest streak of zeros or ones and would say that's the one that the computer came up with. He had other little tricks.
So if you have to come up with fake random coin flips, come up with a really long string of heads and tails and stuff.
Only if you're trying to fool Professor Jordan Peterson in the year 1998.
Which you never know.
Yeah. Boy, that was a long diversion, and I apologize.
That was kind of interesting. You know, kind of. Yeah, you ever read that book, Cryptonomicon? It's like about codes and stuff, and the Imitation Game, Alan Turing kind of stuff. But I think there's stuff in there about, like, the Germans. They didn't perfectly randomize their random numbers, and that helped the Allies crack the Enigma code.
I think it's kind of sad that you asked me what's the most interesting psychological experiment, and I came up with this super boring sequence of zeros and ones.
It was strange. I thought you were going to have a case of, like, a child who was locked in a laboratory for 3 years and didn't learn language or anything. But host chat is host chat. It goes where it goes.
Speaking of language, I've got a topic for debate submitted by a listener, Melissa L. from Los Angeles.
Thanks, Melissa.
I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah, me too.
And thank you to Melissa.
Okay, here we go, guys.
You get a t-shirt.
Topic for debate today. English is the world's greatest language. English is the world's greatest language.
Wow. Okay, I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I absolutely just... This is going to be easy for me to argue. I think it'll be easy for me to argue because I genuinely believe it. I don't know if that helps or hurts you as a debater. Let's not worry about that. English has conquered the world as a language. Basically, it's the second language of almost everyone in the world. Everyone knows that if you want to advance and rise, it's the main language of economics, diplomacy, academics, science, literature, politics are all being conducted in English. There's a reason for that. English is incredibly rich as a language. English came about on an island. The island was then basically conquered by the French after receiving all kinds of influences from the Nordic Viking kind of countries. So already there by the year 1000 AD, English is incredibly rich and deep with synonyms. There's tons and tons of synonyms in English. And that just continued as the English people spread themselves across the world. English became the main language in the U.S. and Canada, so basically all of northern North America. It's the main language in Australia, New Zealand, and Oceania, and it became a major language in India. So in all those places, it picked up, adapted, grew, took on new words, changed itself, modified itself. The people inventing new technologies like the internet and cell phones, they've been using English, and that's just continued the spread of English. The world's major centers of entertainment have been connecting themselves in English, and that has spread the language further and further. As the language grows, it incorporates new ideas, new themes, new synonyms, and we've come up with the richest language the world has ever known. English is the world's greatest language.
In response to your boring history lesson, I would say that none of the success of the English language is due to the actual merits of the language. The English language has become popular, certainly, but that's only because of the history of the United States and because of the superpower status that it's taken on, also that of England and the other countries that speak English. But the reason that people speak English as a first or second language is not because it's beautiful, it's not because it's a good language, it's not because it's a better language than other languages, it's because it's the language that people in the United States and England speak. It's the language that came to dominate the early centers of, as you said, finance, politics, academia. If we were to start over and choose another language that would be easier for the world to understand, there's a lot of better options to choose from. I'd like to point out some of the flaws of English. English is difficult to learn. It's difficult to understand. It has more irregular rules than most languages. Obviously, some of the Romance languages like French and Spanish, there are regular verbs and you have to learn certain exceptions to rules. But English is notorious for its difficulty to learn if you haven't grown up speaking it. There's so many contradictory pronunciations, there's contradictory rules, there's inconsistent rules. Style is an issue that people still grapple with. There's a lot of arguing, or there's a lot of opinions varied on even something as simple as like whether whether or not to use commas in certain examples. These sort of problems don't exist nearly as much in other languages. We're prejudiced. You're extremely prejudiced to the beauty and the greatness of English because you've spoken English your whole life. But I can't believe that if you go to other countries, I mean, especially some like France or Romania or Sweden, I mean, if you spent time in Sweden or even India or Japan, you wouldn't argue that those, if you actually learned language and how people use it to communicate, you wouldn't, you would have to come to the side that English isn't the greatest language
okay,
in the world.
Okay, I've spent a ton of time in the Spanish-speaking world, and I can't say I'm really good at Spanish, but just in my experience, Spanish is a clumsy, weak language. It's difficult to express certain concepts that you can express very easily
what
in English.
What concept have you had difficulty expressing in Spanish? And is it possible that if you did, it's due more to your non-fluency in Spanish than it is the shortcomings of the language itself?
That's definitely true, but I think even a native Spanish speaker would agree that there are... While there are nuances and values in Spanish that are rich and great, why is Spanish and all these other languages full of English loanwords? Why do they borrow so much of our vocabulary? Because we have so many wonderful and inexhaustible expressions.
That's not the reason why those... I'm sorry. That's not the reason why those terms come into parlance in other languages. It's only because those terms get printed in newspapers.
It's not because those terms are good.
It doesn't matter how predictable my argument is, it's because it's the right one.
English is dominant, and so it becomes more dominant and feeds on itself.
Oh, but you're saying that the richness of English is what makes other languages adopt a word like internet or something like that. But that's not why that word becomes adopted in other languages.
I didn't bring up internet.
Well, give me an example of a word that the richness of English has given has given on loan to other languages.
Well, the word cool, right? Uh-huh. The French, they say cool. Right, they just picked up our English word. Why? Because this is a word that it sounds cool. It has a lot of different meanings that convey a lot in one simple sound. Cool. It can be with a cool temperature. It's not cold. It's a beautiful phrase. There's a reason why the French, who presumably think themselves pretty cool, they don't really have a good word for cool.
It's a terrible example because there's so many words that we've borrowed from French that are more specific and better convey meaning. A word like chic, for example. Which, when I say something is chic, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When someone says something is cool, you really don't know exactly what they mean by that.
Yeah, chic's an okay example, but how many times have you said cool versus how many times have you said chic?
Of course.
I want to go back to something about how hard English is to learn, which, yeah, there's a few irregular things. But, I mean, I think there have been linguistic studies of the relative difficulty of learning languages, and I don't think English is in the top. German, for instance, you can get a noun 7 different ways wrong. There's 7 ways to get a noun wrong in German, right? To learn Chinese, even basic Chinese, you have to master tonal differences, mm-hmm. and you have to learn 20,000 characters to read the newspaper.
Here's your problem. You can't just say that those two languages are inferior to English. Your argument is that English is the best, is the greatest
it
language.
Is. Yeah.
But that's crazy. And just because, I actually think that you've been very persuasive in telling us that you think that there may have been a study in which English may not have been that difficult to understand. But I believe that German is easier to learn. I'm sorry. I believe that German is easier to learn than English is for someone who is a non-speaker of the language. And I believe that German is actually more concise and more of an effective language than English.
You think German is a more concise and effective language than English? Based on what? You don't speak German, right?
Yeah,
German has these massive, cumbersome compound words.
Yeah, but it's for someone who speaks German, they're second nature. It doesn't actually affect them.
Well,
German people can become
second nature given a lifetime of learning, right?
Right, but they don't become a hint. I don't think that the length of the words is actually a hindrance to people who are trying to learn the language nearly as much as the irregularity of the rules of English. That's what drives people crazy who are trying to learn the language. That's what makes it not not great. The only feature of English that you've actually pointed to is that it has a lot of synonyms, which A, I think every language does, and B, at a certain point becomes a deficit to the language. Because
I think this is actually, it is a unique trait of English because it borrowed so much from so many other languages.
Which is it, Healy? Is English borrowing from other languages or are other languages borrowing from English?
English is constantly enriching itself with the treasures of other languages. It grows like an animal. That's why it's spread across the earth. It's not just a freak historical accident. There's a reason why English has spread so widely. It's because it's adaptable, pick-upable. People spread it and adapt it and change it, and it has grown and evolved in a way that, say, classical Arabic just hasn't been able to do.
Wait, what is your point that it's grown and evolved?
Yeah, English has...
Because it's picked up a few words from other languages?
It's an adaptable, changing language that incorporates so much from other languages.
The problem with English is that it couldn't get it straight from the beginning. It had Latin roots. It had Greek roots. It didn't know... You don't know which words come from which language, and that's ultimately the failure of English as a language.
I think it's time for closing arguments. Dave is making a case that is exactly the kind of case you would make if you were a guy
who was stuck
in a sort of academic way of thinking and assumed that the best language would be very rigid and rule-oriented. You probably prefer we all spoke Esperanto. But the fact is that the way humans communicate is best done in... The richest body of human expression is in English for a reason. Because English is a rich and supple language that can grow and expand, adapt, change, it's done so much, incorporated so much, and brought so much across the world, there's a reason why English is the dominant language of the world. It's easy to pick up, it's catchy, it sounds nice, it's a great practical language, a wonderful language for literature, a good language for business, and a great language for friendship.
Ugh. Oh, wow. I'll close on a statement that is, to a certain extent, a different tact than what I've brought before, because I think you're right. Maybe I have been a bit too clinical and academic in my tactics so far. I think that French is far more beautiful a language than English. I think that on a subjective level, listening to French is far more pleasant than listening to English. I know that it's a hacky choice. I know that it's the obvious choice, but I also believe it to be true. French has more L's, it has more V's, it has more consonants which roll. English is blockier, it's choppier, it's less consistent. There's a reason that French is sort of depicted as the language of love.
That's because there are a lot of babes in France.
Closing statement. There's hot babes in Brazil, but people don't speak of Portuguese the same way they speak of French as a language of love. I know that Portuguese is a beautiful language, and Healy, it looks like you want to jump in. If you want to go ahead and defend Portuguese as just as beautiful as French, go ahead, because I agree with you. There's many languages that are more beautiful than English. In addition to all the reasons I listed earlier about why English is a bad language, for lack of a better word, there are other languages which simply evoke more feelings and sound better, and so on an artistic level, English is also a failure. It is also not the greatest language. There are dozens of more beautiful and greater languages than English.
Medina, what'd you think?
You can't say anything other than I trounced him in this debate. Our friendship is over.
Really?
Yes, you're a fucking idiot. Medina, go ahead. What'd you think?
A couple of thoughts. One, I wonder, the question that it raised for me was, which language adds the most words each year?
Well, these days it's got to be English.
It has to be, but that doesn't mean that it's great. It just means that it's popular. Well, also, I mean...
And is that because, basically... innovation and commerce is sort of denominated in English.
Yeah, it's the international. It is the default international language, at least for most things.
And you think that it's just historical accidents of England and the United States becoming powerful, nothing to do with the language itself?
I think during the globalization of commerce, if you will, the United States was the dominant superpower, and other countries, it behooved them to learn English. And that's why. It has nothing to do with the features of the language. Of course not.
Is it possible that it's easier to speak either acceptable broken English than it is to speak acceptable broken French?
I was going to get down to like pigeons. I think it's easier to make like a pigeon English.
Why?
Just, I don't know why. but it is.
Well, you have. I mean, are we still debating what's going on?
I don't know.
You have nothing
now we're
to back
musing.
That up. People. I mean, you couldn't get by with. I speak broken French, and people understand me quite well.
Do you,
whether I'm in France or Montreal
or in Bishop, California.
Did I speak French up there?
Yeah, remember those French people were going to take a table? There's some French people came into it. We were up fly fishing, and some French people came into a restaurant.
Yeah.
And they didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, they weren't getting seated.
I basically shoved you at them and said, this guy speaks French.
Yes.
I said, in French, he speaks French.
And I helped them out.
Yeah, but they knew what was happening. I was just fucking around.
I think the listeners and I are going to agree that this is a pretty hot debate.
Yeah, I was surprised by Dave's passion.
Well, I just think you're so wrong. I'm not even passionate about this topic. I'm passionate about your incorrectness.
This is a rare case where actually I think some facts would have helped us, because I think there are ways to measure how difficult a language is to learn. And that thing I said about German, I think is true. I think German is pretty hard to not to learn, but to become a native speaker of German, I think is almost impossible.
A non-native speaker.
For a non-native speaker to become fluent in German, I think.
So cross German off the list. You've still got 300 other languages that could be more beautiful.
Yeah.
Which language do you think is the best? I don't think you said.
Well, I threw Romanian out there.
Well, it's a Romance language.
Sure.
I mean, I'm partial to... Right? Romanian is a language, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm partial to French because my mom is a French teacher. I grew up, like, being taught French, and I've traveled to France a lot. I think it sounds gorgeous. But if I'm willing to hear an argument for Italian or other languages. I don't know anything about the languages of Africa or South Asia. I don't know anything about, you know, some small...
Have you seen
there's
that...
There's got to be languages that 3,000 people speak that are fucking amazing.
Have you seen that Vicky Cristina Barcelona, that movie?
Yeah.
There's a scene, there's like Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz are sitting there, and they've got Scarlett Johansson on the other side of the table, and Scarlett Johansson can't speak Spanish. And Penelope Cruz says, you can't speak any Spanish. And she's like, no, I studied Chinese. And Penelope Cruz is like, why? And Scarlett Johansson says, well, I thought it sounded nice. And she said, say something in Chinese. And Scarlett Johansson goes, ni hao ma. And Penelope Cruz, you thought that sounded beautiful. You think that you like that, how that sounds? And Scarlett Johansson's like, yeah, I don't know. And that's sort of like the point of the scene is like Penelope Cruz, like, look at this moron. He doesn't get it.
Sounds kind of nice to me. On that note, let's wrap it up, guys. We'll see you next week on The Great Debates.